Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the Courts and Lineage podcast. My name is Zach Lowy. I'm the co-founder of Breaking the Lines. Here today with the founder and creator of Sporting 160 EN, one of the best accounts to follow if you want to stay up to date with the reigning Portuguese league champions. And his name is Sam Fonseca. Sam has already done one episode with us this season. Really excited to have him back on. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. Thank you for the kind words as well. If you do want to follow us on Twitter, if you are a sporting fan, I'd recommend. Maybe not if you're another fan of any other team, because I'll admit, we are quite biased over there. We love our club, and we have different opinions sometimes, but you know, it's all for the love of the club. But I'm really glad to be back on. Thank you, Zach, for having me back on. It was really fun the first time, and hopefully you can go with a repeat and have another great episode today.
Absolutely. It was a great fun having you on the last time. Great fun as well of being on the Sporting 160 EN podcast. Wow, that was about a month ago, and a lot has changed since then. I remember, I think we were doing the prediction. This was right before the Ajax game. And I think that I was the only one who predicted Sporting to lose.
Yeah. Like I said, bias beyond measure sometimes. Sometimes we all got a vote for Sporting to win. And then,
I have my fair share of terrible predictions, so don't worry about it. But yeah, I think Ajax would win 2-1, ended up winning 5-1. And of course, they ended up losing to Dortmund. Since then, been a promising run of form for Sporting, who defeated Arouca in a very close match before international break. Beat the original Belenenses, shall we say, in the Taça de Portugal. Defeated Besiktas in a very comfortable 4-1 margin with goals from Pablo Sarabia, Paulinho, as well as a brace from Sebastian El Patron Coates. Sure, we'll talk about him a little bit more. And recently, grabbing a 1-0 victory, very slim win, against Moreirense. Now, this was a very interesting game. Moreirense, are a team that will typically, and I would say similar to most teams outside of the top three, that want to stoke up pressure, play defensively, maybe eke out a win, but are mainly focused on defending and not leaking opportunities, right? And we saw that with Sporting dominating 66% possession, 15 shots to Moreirense's 5. It was clear what João Henrique's side came out to do. But Sporting, just after conceding a really good chance to Moreirense, taking the lead early on from Sebastian Coates, once again, is a center back.
you wouldn't believe so, would you? You
wouldn't believe so, looking at his record. I mean, Coates, just one game, just literally days after scoring a brace against Besiktas, Coates gets the vital goal to lead them to a 1-0 victory. And Coates is no stranger to goals in big moments. Scored an 83rd minute goal against Belenenses' side last season that would see Sporting tie it up and equalize in the 96th minute. Grabbed a goal, a 93rd minute winner against Santa Clara. I remember that match. Scored a brace against Gil Vicente. Both of those goals coming in the last 10 minutes lead them to a come behind win. He really is Mr. Clutch. And there are various games where I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say he is probably Sporting's biggest attacking threat. But yeah, talk to me a little bit about not just the goals, but what Sebastian Coates brings to this team. Just how important is he? The Sporting's defense.
I think if you look at it on sort of face value, a lot of people remember Coates from being at Liverpool and then being a part of Sunderland's team, which eventually got relegated. But ever since, I'd say the first two seasons under George Jesus when he came in, he was phenomenal. I don't think he was as good as he was then as he is now. I think that has a lot to do with Ruben Amorim. The season before we won the league, he went viral, and this was like something my friends would send to me. Not sure if you remember, I can't remember the exact game. He gave away 3 penalties, so like a hat trick of penalties. And he, that season, a lot of people were calling him to be let go, to be sold. He signed a contract renewal in probably his worst season at the club. And to give him all the credit in the world, you see the improvement that he's made. And wherever that's something to do with him personally or just Ruben Amorim, he's come in and he's definitely improved his defensive game. You know, for people outside of Sporting, might not realise that we call him El Patron. It's for a reason. He commands the defence. And, you know, he's got Vidal, who's obviously got experience in big leagues like Spain and obviously in the Morocco national team. But then he's had people decide for him throughout the years. So Jeremy Mathieu, who's, I mean, didn't have the best time at Barca, but when he came to Sporting was a fan favourite instantly. And now going from Jeremy Mathieu to, I don't want to say a similar player because it's definitely not, yeah, but Gonzalo Inacio has that sort of characteristics of a Mathieu. He's comfortable on the ball, great passer. That assist, he gets a lot of assists from centre-back. And these are like long balls. These aren't just like sort of like hitting hopes. But I think Quaes does sort of command the defence and he makes everyone around it better. That includes Joao Paulinho in front of him and Braganza, who we'll talk about a little bit later on, I'm sure. But it's almost like a meteoric rise for Coates because he, like I said, he went from sort of being on the outskirts of not really liked by Sporting fans a lot, especially towards the end of that the Marcel Kaiser season and Stilles and all of these interim coaches we had. But I've got to give credit to the man. I actually got his jersey last year. I'm not sure if you can see it. It's actually hanging on the wall there, framed. I went to London, which was a nuclear Sporting, which is like a sort of cafe or pub based on Sporting. I went there to watch the title celebrations. And, you know, I said, I'm going to frame the jersey. He was the one who lifted it. I've never seen, up until that moment, Sporting win the league. And for him to be the captain lifting it, 100% deserved. I don't know the man, but I'm proud of him. And it makes me proud to see the progression of not just him, but the whole club in general. I think that Coates is 100% one of the main parts in that.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Ruben Dias gone, I think there is a strong argument to be made that Coates is the best center back in Portugal right now. You have other players like Pepe, Jan Vertonghen, right, Nicolas Otamendi, so on and so on. But I think that Coates probably on top right now. Sporting going with, you know, a variation of their 3-4-3 against Modric. Gonzalo Inacio back in the defense after missing some time due to injury alongside Coates and Matheus Reis, your boy, your favorite Brazilian player, Matheus Reis, continuing to start over Zuhair Fidal on the left side of that back three. No surprises with the attack in Pablo Sarabia, Pedro Gonçalves, and Paulinho, or the wingbacks, Pedro Porro, as well as Nuno Santos, who has continued to establish himself in that new position of left wingback, taking over for Nuno Mendes after his departure to Paris Saint-Germain. But what really caught my eye, though, it was really intriguing for me, was the double pivot of João Paulinho and Daniel Braganza. Braganza, a player we've talked a lot about, starting over Matheus Nunes and dropping a phenomenal performance in the heart of midfield. Talk to me a little bit about this Braganza performance. I mean, at what point are we talking about, you know, a player who should be starting? What does Braganza bring to the team? Because it, see, for me, from my perspective, this is a very unique and special talent.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to agree. But the thing is, and it's difficult for Amorim, is do you change the formation to include Matheus Nunes, Braganza and Paulinho? Because we talk about Braganza, but Matheus Nunes has also been a fantastic midfielder ever since joining from Estoril. But I think at the end of the day, I think Braganza offers that bit more creativity than Nunes, and that's no disrespect to Nunes to play, because I think he's quality as well. But it's just, can you give reason for dropping Matheus Nunes? I don't think so. Can you give reason for dropping Braganza? Not really either. And Paulinho's never being dropped. He's not part of that conversation. He's in there for the long haul. And I think he's got to switch up formation to include Braganza and Matheus Nunes, but Braganza the last few games has been absolutely phenomenal, and I think this was the perfect game for him. Morient said they had the pressure on them, giving the ball away from us, and I think that unlocks Braganza's creativity. He's just got such a good footballing IQ, I think, and to unlock the game and read the game the way he does reminds me of like a a pure midfielder that you see, I don't know, Iniesta back in the day, you know, Xavi and all of those. I'm not comparing the player right now, but like he has elements of his game that reminds me of those players. And I think Braganza is one of these people that we're going to be talking about, whether it's at Sporting, whether it's at Premier League, Serie A, Spanish League. I think he can do it all, and I think it's only a matter of time before he is the next one called up to the national team. You know, Matheus Nunes got that call recently, as well as the Brazilian call went for Portuguese. But Brianna is just a fantastic player, and we talked about him last time, saying he deserves more opportunities. And he's literally grabbed them with both hands, played so, so well. But like I said, it's what's Amorim going to do? Does he start Polina and Matheus, or Braganza and Polina, or does he start all three? It's really a good situation, but one of these players is going to be missing out. But Braganza, for me, top notch, and I know we'll get into the actual game in a bit, but definitely the man of the match for me in this game, and definitely was in the last game as well. What a phenomenal, phenomenal talent.
Absolutely. Sporting keeping pace with Porto and Benfica, level on points with the Dragões, and just 1 point behind Benfica. Moreirense, on the other hand, Moreirense just 1 point above the relegation zone in 14th. A lot of players who have impressed me on this team, I have to say. I mean, looking at like the Rodrigo Conceição, Sergio Conceição's son, I thought he had a very good game in the right wing back position. Another player, Ibrahima Camara, playing in the double pivot in midfield. Surprisingly, actually, as relegated, Felipe Soares to the bench. Felipe, another very talented Benfica product who we've talked a lot about, but only played, I think, like 10 minutes against Sporting. I was very surprised that João Henriquez did not bring him on earlier. I felt like the game was there for the taking for their perspective, but impressive performance from Ibrahima Camara. Another player, though, that we've talked a lot about on this Moreirense side is Abdou Conte. Conte, you know, an ex-Sporting player who spent some time in Sporting's academy and had a very good season at Moreirense, has really come into his own and under João Henriquez, and even earning a call-up and starting for Portugal in the U21 Euros. I thought he was a very dangerous threat against Sporting, you know, despite not getting the victory. It was a really impressive performance from Conte. 3 tackles, 6 out of 7 ground duels won, 2 key passes. Stats don't tell the full story, but I think it's fair to say that he was their biggest threat. I nearly set up Rafael Martins with an early goal right before Coates' winner. It makes me wonder, though, because, you know, Sporting may or may not exercise their purchase clause on Rubén Vinagre, who, as we know, was, you know, brought in after his impressive loan spell at Famalicão as the long-term successor to Nuno Mendes. And I think that Vinagre actually started off the season decent, but when Nuno Mendes left for Paris Saint-Germain on the final day of the window, I'm not sure if you agree with this, but for me, there's a very colossal drop in form from Vinagre. I think the pressure may have got to him after that horrific performance against Ajax. It seems like he's kind of faded away. I'm not sure when was the last time he played for Sporting. He sort of faded away from Amorim's plan. So, you know, not 100% sure if they are going to exercise their purchase option on Vinagre, especially with Nuno Santos doing fairly well in this left wing back position. Could you possibly see Sporting making a move for Abdou Conte or any other player on this Moreirense team?
Yeah, I mean, last time I was here, I was saying that I think he would have been a great left-back choice for Porto when we were asking. They went with Wendell from Bayer Leverkusen, who I mean, I think he's a good player, but I would have loved to see Conte make that jump. And I saw a tweet going the other day, I can't remember who it was from, but it was saying that Vinagre, I think it's, what, 10 million for the clause to get him permanently. And there's we spent 5 million on Esgaio and all these defenders we brought in when Conte was right there, probably could have got him for under 2 million, would you say? 3 million?
3 million, I think, would have done the trick. But what? Real quick, though, I want you to keep going, but what have you made of Esgaio?
I personally like Esgaio. I think he does his role well. He's a backup, and I think we all knew he's not getting rid of Pedro Porro anytime soon. The good thing about this guy is he's versatile. He can play the right wing, the right wing back. He can play right wing, left back. He can even, I reckon he could do a job at centre back if needed. And he was tested against in Ajax, you know, which went horribly. But I think he's one of those players that you love to have in your squad because he can fill so many holes. I think I can imagine him being frustrated with the playing time he's got, considering he was the number one undisputed star of Braga from them being sort of a backup from Pedro Porro. But that's no sort of knock on him, because Pedro Porro, like we said, is fantastic, fantastic player. But I really do like this guy. But I do love Abdou Conte, and I think he is ready to make that step up, whether it's to Sporting, Porto, Benfica. You know, he could do a job for... he really seems to be like someone that the Spanish league would take and sort of mould into a better left back. I think the opportunity is ready for him, and I don't see him being at Moriens next season.
Very good win for Sporting, and I agree with you. I think that it is going to be a headache for Ruben Amorim, thinking, you know, how do we fit in Braganza? Do I have to change the system? How do we fit in both those players? It's going to be a bit of a headache for him, but it's also a good headache to have, you know what I mean? Sporting taking on Famalicão in midweek action and then facing off against Vitória de Guimarães. Famalicão, you know, helping kick off the weekend on Friday and defeating Santa Clara, their first league victory of the season under Ivo Vieira, taking the lead right before halftime via Simon Banza. Santa Clara going down to 10 men just after the break, and Simon Banza getting another goal from the penalty spot, then getting sent off due to time wasting, which I thought was a bit ridiculous. Kind of whatever. Referee is trying to be protagonist as usual. But, you know, Simon Banza has been one of the players who I think has impressed me the most on this Maliko team. Obviously been a poor start for them, but Banza, 25 years old, joining on loan from Len after Arnaud Kalimwendo had returned from Paris Saint-Germain and joined Len on loan. Banza, that's now four goals in his last three games, right? He opened the scoring against Vitória, got a goal against Académica, got a brace against Santa Clara, and of course he got a brace to start his Maliko career against Moreirense. What have you made of Simon Banza? Just how important do you think he's going to be to this Maliko side and their efforts to not only stay up, but to challenge for your potentially, you know, I'm curious what your thoughts are on him.
Yeah, you know, like I said last time I was here, I'm not the biggest fan of Famalicão, the team, the fans, just the whole project. I really dislike Famalicão. Obviously, sort of a bogey team for Sporting, never beaten them since they've been promoted. But they have a really, really poor start. And Banza is a good player for them, but I think the issues lie elsewhere. Their defence is not very good. And watching that game against Santa Clara, they had loads of opportunities to score, but Marco Pereira in goal for Santa Clara was absolutely fantastic, especially in the first half. The goal he conceded was a bit sort of off the set piece. It does happen, but I thought he was very good for that first half at least. The penalty that was given to Famalicão, I don't know what you thought about it. I thought it was soft. I'm not saying it wasn't a penalty. It was definitely soft. And I think if you go down and the ref gives a penalty, there's no other option to give a red card. Whether I think it's harsh, which I do, is I just think, you know, it's Portuguese league, that's going to be called 10 times out of 10. But I felt quite sorry for Santa Clara in that aspect. But fans of time wasting, like you said, I don't think I've ever seen that happen in Portuguese league. And considering how much time wasting goes on, we both watched a lot of games, especially against like the big three or even Braga and Guimarães. The teams that they play against, all time waste, and it's never, ever sort of actioned. But like you said, refs taking centre stage is nothing new to Liga Buin. I really think Famalicão need to make some changes in January. I'm not sure if that comes from, you know, they're very good at getting loan players in from top clubs and top leagues. I think they have to sort of repeat that and just hope they get lucky at one point. They've got, I'll give them credit, they've got such good scouting team, getting in Pedro Gonçalves, who is sort of floundering at Wolves, and they've got Sun Xiao, and just so many players, like even Vinagre as well, floundering at Wolves and all of these players, you can argue the George Mendes factor does help, and of course it does, but it's also great to have for a team like Famalicão. I don't know if it's the tactics or it's the players, but something needs to change, and same with Santa Clara. If you told me at the start of the season that these two teams would be fighting off relegation, I wouldn't have believed you, but looking at their performances, I think they are both in very big trouble.
Absolutely. I think that some have the quality to turn around. I'm not sure about Santa Clara really seeming to miss Carlos Jr., which we talked about. I do think that Fama's, you know, they need to improve defensively. Alex Netra and Alex Nascimento have been a decent pairing, but I think that, personally, I would like to see them try to get Noen Perez on loan again. Hasn't really played much at Udinese, and obviously had a phenomenal season there just a few years ago. But a lot of quality players in that squad. Ivan Jaime, Heriberto Tavares, Charles Pickle. You know, I expect them to stay up. I'm a bit more worried about Santa Clara personally, but still a lot of football to be played. And, you know, this weekend we saw two scoreless draws, one of them going between Boavista and Belenenses side, the other coming up against Passos Ferreira and Arouca, with, you know, Passos going down to 10 men from Nuno Santos, the Benfica one, not the Benfica Loney, not the Sporting one, player we've talked a lot about as well. And Passos holding on to a 0-0 draw via Andre Ferreira, who made 6 saves. So not a bad result for them, who remain in 9th. Arouca, on the other hand, in 16th. I'm curious, you know, what have you made of Arouca so far? I know they played Sporting just a few weeks ago, I think right before the international break. 16th, so currently in the relegation spot, but obviously, you know, there are just 4 points between Arouca in 16th and Passos in 9th. So that really tells you, like, how thin, I would say, the gap is, you know, between mid-table, whatever that may be, and relegation zone. I'm curious, though, what have you made of Arouca so far this season under Armando Evangelista? Do you feel that they have what it takes to stay up?
It's difficult, because you could say, from looking from, let's say, 10th or 11th downwards, that all of those teams would be candidates for relegation. Tondela, I think, will be fine. I think they've just got to find their footing and they'll be okay. But everyone else in that bottom half at the moment is not looking good. You know, Belenenses sat dead last. Santa Clara as well, we spoke about, considering how close they were to getting into Europe as well, it's such a letdown, and then obviously selling their best players abroad. You know, I'm not in charge of a football club, but that's not how I'd run it personally. But it's difficult for Arouca, because the other two teams who've been promoted have been somewhat decent. Vizela especially have been, I wouldn't expect them to be 12th, you know, they're still near that relegation zone, but I think they've held their own. We'll talk about their game recently, but even against us when we played them, I think it was the first match day, I was very impressed with how they performed and everything. But I still think Arouca, I don't think they have what it takes to stay up. I think if I were to make a prediction right now, and obviously like I said, still a lot of games to be played, I think Santa Clara, with what they've done, I think they've ruined it. Unless they sign some players in January, they've got the funds, it seems. They've made record sales and they've sold their best players. At the moment, I see Santa Clara going down. I would put Belenenses and Arouca there. I think the order that it goes in, but maybe I'd say Belenenses dead last, Arouca, and then Santa Clara in the relegation playoffs for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, those three teams, probably best bet to go down. Santa Clara, Belenenses, Arouca. Yeah, I think that would probably be my pick as well. But of course, you've got teams like, you know, Tondela, Marítimo, Vizela. You know, I think that it's going to be another very interesting relegation fight, no doubt. Talking a little bit about another promoted team, though, Vizela, nearly picking up a point against Benfica, who are skating on thin ice at the moment. I mean, obviously had a perfect start to the season under Jorge Jesus, losing 0-1 at the Estadio de Luz against Portimonense, losing 4-0 to Bayern Munich. I would argue that that's the least embarrassing of the three past results we've seen. And just barely beating Vizela 1-0 via a 98-minute goal from Rafa Silva. Are you concerned at all? Concerned is not the right word. I know you want Benfica to lose every game possible.
I am happy. But,
what have you made of Benfica's recent form? Do you think Jorge Jesus perhaps needs to switch things up to prevent them from getting stale?
If I'm being honest, they're still the favourites for me for the title. And, you know, recent form might suggest otherwise. But I generally, obviously, they didn't want to lose Bayern, but I don't think losing 4-0 to Bayern is reflective of what Benfica are currently. And to be honest, I don't think there's any shame of losing 4-0 to Bayern. Obviously, it's a game you want to win, but it's Bayern Munich. They're one of the best teams consistently over, what, last 10, 15 years? So they have a great team, and the quality is definitely shown. But I think it's not time to hit the panic button yet for Benfica. There were times, especially during this game, the defence was really sloppy and not paying attention to the sort of rebounds. Vizela were lucky to not score off a few rebound goals from saves from the Benfica keeper. But I will give a shout-out to Charles, the Vizela goalkeeper. He was absolutely phenomenal. Some of the saves he made, that one volley from Rafa Silva was like such a good save. When I was watching the game, I literally had to stop and like, did he actually just save that? And for me, Charles was man of the match. And I thought very unlucky to concede that really late goal, 97th minute. All Vizela had to do was just keep the ball, don't lose position, and it was 0-0, and that's a point well-deserved for Vizela. But, you know, it does happen. You lose possession, and then Benfica's counter-attack is so dangerous. Rafa Silva especially has been in great form for them. I've been really disappointed with Everton ever since he joined Benfica. You know, coming off his great season in Brazil, and he had all this hype around him about going to the Premier League and everywhere else. He's really disappointed, and I don't see Benfica holding out much longer on him. I think they're going to try and maybe flog him in January or next summer for definitely a discount from what they bought him for. But I definitely think there's no reason for Benfica fans or Benfica to hit the panic button. You know, you could say the Porto Minense game was definitely a shock, but a loss is going to come somewhere. And you'd rather have it early on the season to sort of work out your flaws than, let's say, have it late on when you're in neck and neck in the title race or anything like that. I don't think it's time to panic yet. If, let's say, they played next week and they lose or they draw, okay, then it's time to start panicking. But like we said, Bayern Munich is definitely not anything to worry about. Porto Minense, it happens. You do have those games. Sporting were very lucky not to have them last year. Like we said, we had Coates scoring 98th minute goals as well. So I'm not going to complain about the added time, because it happens everywhere in Portugal. It's not just for Benfica or Sporting. So, but Benfica's defence looks sloppy to me. Like I said, getting those rebounds. Lucky that Vizela missed. If I were George Jesus, I would try and change a few things. I would try to get another striker in January. I don't think Darwin or Seferovic are up to standard. Darwin has looked good in points, but I don't think he's what they need at this point. Seferovic, the same. He can get you 20 goals a game. Last year, I think he got, 23 in the league? But if you watch Benfica, he should have had 33, 43. He missed so many chances for them. And I think that's going to add up. So I think if I'm George Jesus, I would say another striker and another centre-back, and hopefully you should be good. I mean, the defence is old, definitely. Andre Almeida, right-back, he's 31, coming off a really bad injury. Vertonghen has been slowing down for a while. Otamendi is still old. I really do like Lucas Prisma. I think he's probably the future of their defence. Reminds me of what Luis Dao could be for them, sort of that long longevity that he had, and being sort of the manager of the defence, should I say. I really do like him, and I think they should sort of build the defence around him. I think they should start to build around Grismo. Grimaldo is always a consistent player. I don't think there's any chance of him going. I think build around Lucas Grismo, and you've got a recipe for success, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, Benfica, still a very good start, nonetheless. I can completely agree with what you mentioned, though. Charles, you know, with a superb performance in goal. When people ask me what I think the best position, what perhaps the most stacked position is in Portugal, no question in my mind, I say goalkeeper. I think part of that is due to the fact that most teams, when facing a Benfica, Porto, or Sporting, will, you know, sit deep and just try to soak up the pressure, and that you know, forces goalkeepers to be on their toes every time. But with that being said, you know, so many quality players in goal here. You know, we've seen the likes of Ederson, Jan Oblak, and so many other studs here. But I mean, looking at, you know, likes of Charles, for example, who left Marichimo and was replaced by Paulo Victor, who did very well again against Vitória de Guimarães. I think you mentioned Santa Clara's goalkeeper Marco Pereira. You know, we mentioned André Ferreira in goal for Passos de Ferreira. Paulo Sergio, another player who was monumental in Portimonense's win against Estoril. So there are some other factors, but I think that it is such a stacked position. And
what's annoying about it, though, is that if you look at the last sort of month of European fixtures, Premier League fans will think Diogo Costa is not a good goalkeeper from his performance. And it was a bad performance, don't get me wrong. But he, I think, is going to be Portugal's next number one. He's got all the qualities to do that. Adan, like I said, we got smacked by Ajax, and deservedly so. He has been so crucial for us, making some great saves. Not the best with his feet, obviously, and I think he's not perfect in that regard. But he's a great shot stopper. But if he could have two in sort of Vlachidimos and Helton Lieta, I think.
Right.
I think they're good, but I don't think they're at the level of Adan or Diogo Costa. But I think, like you said, we're so stacked in this position. It's like goalkeepers are stacked. When you look at strikers, the league is bare bones.
And, you know, like I said, I think that part of that is due to most teams are going to play defensive and just grind out a draw. But, you know, one team that has sort of gone against the grain and become a revelation in many ways, I would say, is Estoril Praia. You know, they, for me, I'm not saying that they're like Pep's Barcelona or anything, but I think that they have, you know, shown perhaps a new way, not a new way, but a unique way that you don't always see in Portugal. Based off against another one of the revelations of the league season so far in Portimonense, right, playing the two sides playing each other at the Estádio Municipal de Portimão in the Algarve today. And Estoril coming out on top, the visitors coming out on top via goals from André Franco and Bruno Lourenço. Bruno Lourenço. We've talked a lot about André Franco, you know, another player who is a very exciting young talent. But overall, what have you made of this Estoril team? You know, currently fourth in the league, so 2 points ahead of Braga, 5 points behind Sporting and Porto. What do you think has been so special about them this season?
I think what's great about Estoril, you can see they have a plan in place, and that's tactically, and then with player recruitment as well. They've made some great signings, and I can't say I watched much of the second division last year. But if you would have told me that they would have been as good as they are this year, I would have laughed probably. I think they can be what Santa Clara should have been. And that's a project where you have to sort of build on instead of getting so close to the pinnacle of European football and then just stripping the whole team bare bones and getting rid of everyone. If you look at, like you said, André Franco has been so good for them. You know, he's only 23. And, you know, if he continues what he's doing, I can't see why he can't make the jump to a big three or a big four this summer. But I think Estoril have a plan in place. And I think keeping those players like André Franco is going to be what Santa Clara should have done with their players that they've got rid of. And sort of not just taking the first paycheck you see in and getting rid of them. I really do like Estoril. And we managed to beat them, but I don't think it was that deserved. I do think they're going to be up in European competition, whether that's going to be the conference or Europa League. I think they're if they carry on like they have, like you said, definitely still a lot of football to be played. But I really thought Tondela was going to be good with the signings they made, Thiago Dantas and Eduardo Quaresma. But Estoril have really, really surprised me. And You know, they've got one of my all-time favorite players, Chico Gerald. You know, maybe not in terms of actual quality, but just in terms of like a human and like a nice guy. I love him so much. One of my friends actually met him in a pub in Portugal, and apparently he was just really, really nice, really down to earth. So I'm also glad that my boy Chico is having a good time there as well. But Estoril, I think they're going to do some damage this season, and they're going to be ones to watch for quite a while now.
Estoril, really impressed with them. Some quality players on that team. Chiquinho, Andre Franco, Chico Gerald, as you mentioned, Carlos Soria at right back. Some really exciting talents in that Estoril team. But I think the biggest star so far has been Bruno Pinheiro, the manager. Moving on to another, how do I put this, bald manager. Pepa took charge of Vitória de Guimarães this summer, right, after his phenomenal season with Paso Siqueira. And, you know, Vitória has been a kind of a so-so start to the season, but currently 3 straight wins after losing to Benfica. They defeated Famalicão, defeated Oliveira, Hospital in the Taça de Portugal, and recently defeating Marítimo 2-1. I don't know if you saw this game. I thought that it was another game where, you know, Marítimo, the inferior side, came and soaked up pressure and defended. And you see that with Vitória, 27 shots, Marítimo 7. Okay, so 20 more shots for Vitória, who took the lead in 76th minute finally from Oscar Stupinian and were in the driver's seat, but conceded in the 89th minute from Claudio Wink, who scored, I think, an incredibly reminiscent goal of Tony Pulis's Stoke. You know, just like those aggressive throw-in header goals that we saw from Roy de Lop. So really nice bullet throw in, you know, goal from them. But just literally seconds after the equalizer, Rochinha scoring the goal in the 91st minute to lead Vitória to victory. I think that Vitória are, you know, the team with a lot of question marks in the back four, as well as goalkeeper, you know, Matheus Turmal versus Bruno Varela. That's an interesting debate with the goalkeeper. Not a lot of quality in the back four, but I think looking at midfield and attack, there is a lot of talent for Vitória, for Pepa to work with at Vitória. And you saw that with the quality just in that bench against Marítimo, right? Nicolas Janvier, André Almeida, Thomas Sandel, Ruben Lomayres, Bruno Duarte, as well as Rochinha, all on the bench for this game. I'm curious, do you think that any of these players that were on the bench should be starting? I know there's been some controversy in midfield with Alfa Semedo and André starting over younger, talented players such as André Almeida, Andel, Janvier, and as well as Rochinha. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Rochinha, because Marcus Edwards, who we've talked a lot about, once again, proving crucial in Vitória's decisive winning goal. Ricardo Quaresma starting on the other flank. Rochinha, though, coming on and really stealing the show to lead Vitória to victory. Do you think that any of those players have a shout to be in the starting lineup?
I do like Adja Almeida for what I've seen of him. And the thing is with Rochinha, I really, it's difficult because we all love Ricardo Quaresma, and he is like the epitome of just like the man's footballer, like just so skillful. And there's always, you bring Ricardo Quaresma, it's always the what if questions. But I just don't think he has it in him to be starting for a team like Guimarães anymore. And it does pay me to say, because I love Quaresma. He obviously came from Sporting and then went to Porto, and there's his undying love for Porto most days. But I think he just needs to. I don't know if it's a Guimarães issue or just his issue. I think Rochinha has been ready to take over. Whereas André Almeida as well, I can't claim to have watched a lot of Guimarães this season, but last season watching them, it was almost like a club in turmoil, going from Thiago, the manager, him going out in interviews and saying they fought players who I didn't want. And I thought that was a shot of Ricardo Quaresma, especially. I think give the Reigns a, they should be better at what they have been. And I think looking at their team, like you've read out some names, but even at Maritimo, I've been impressed with Shada since he's been there. I really think he's a quality footballer and will develop into a good one as well. But I think the only one that should really be starting, well, only two, sorry, should be starting is Rochinha and Andre Almeida. Whoever you have to take out, I don't think Marcus Edwards comes out of that team. I think he's the sort of cornerstone of Guimarães at the moment. So I'd probably say take out Quaresma and probably Bruno Duarte for Rochinha and Andre Almeida. Sorry, Andre for Andre Almeida, respectively.
Yeah, as you mentioned, well, some quality in that Maritimo team. I thought Andre Vidigal did okay for some parts in attack. I do think, though, that for me, Julio Velasquez isn't quite getting the most out of this team. I feel like that, I don't know, for me, they've just been too defensive and they're playing to, you know, just barely stay up when they have potential for more. We'll see what happens, though. And of course, so we've gone over most of the games from this weekend. One game that we have not gone over from match day 9, though, is Porto's win against Tondela. So Porto, you know, heading to the Estadio João Cardoso and taking on Tondela, who took the lead early on via Neto Borges, player who we've talked a lot about, Brazilian left back, having a very nice start to the season for Tondela. Porto, though, equalizing in the 20th minute from Mehdi Taremi. Tondela, just minutes later, going down to 10 men. Taremi giving Porto the lead right before halftime and getting his hat trick in the 91st minute. You know, this is right after a pretty underwhelming performance against Milan, where let's not forget he still got the assist for Luis Diaz's goal. But once again, Taremi coming to the rescue and leading Porto to the victory. Porto currently just 1 point behind Benfica and level with Sporting. We talked a lot about Taremi, but just how good is this player?
For me, I think definitely the best striker of Portugal by miles, not just in terms of finishing, but his positional awareness on the pitch is always top-notch. You know, he reads the offside traps very well, gets into positions, offset pieces and corners. I think when you look at, I really wanted him for Sporting before we signed Paulinho and before he signed for Porto. I just really wanted him. He was the player who I thought, that's Arias player to a T, that's a Sporting player to a T. And he went to Porto, and you know, we've ruled up that mistake. We've spent 16 million on Paulinho. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I do like Paulinho as a striker. I think for, let's say, 6 million or 8 million, Paulinho is a decent buy. To be a record striker, but having players like Taremi go for a fraction of the price but be miles better than you is just sad. And we talk about Taremi. I just want to give a shout out to someone who we actually mentioned when we were last on. I'm not sure if you remember. We said to Conceição, if you play Vitinha, your team is going to change. You're going to play better. And Vitinha is just such a good player. We talk about Bragança. I think a midfield future of Vitinha and Bragança is a mouthwatering proposition for not just Sporting and Porto fans, but all Portugal fans. I think those two are so special. Vitinha is the secret weapon, I think, for Porto and should be getting more game time. All the hype is around Luis Diaz at the moment, deservedly so. I would say world-class player, definitely, at the moment. No, ever since he's joined Porto, he's been fantastic. But I would say Taremi, I think he gets a lot of hate for his diving. But I do think he's quite underappreciated, not just by other fans, but by Porto fans as well. But for me, Taremi and Vitinha are just key players for Porto.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, you mentioned it with Vitinha, right? And Taremi, the fact that he joined from Rio Ave for just a fraction of the price for what Sporting paid for Paulinho. And Paulinho, as you mentioned, he's had some good games. But overall, I don't think he's anywhere close to making up the money that they spent on him, especially given his age. Another very underwhelming performance at the weekend. really just been so many games this season where Sporting could have easily put the match away, you know, gone up 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, but were in the fight until the last minute because of Paulinho's lack of efficiency. You know, obviously not the only issue of the Sporting team, but for me,
it's definitely like the major issue. Sorry.
He's been a flop.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, even if we had Tony Martinez before, he's a fantastic striker instead of Paulinho, I think. And this is not, don't get me wrong, this is not like a bash Paulinho segment of the show. I just think that Tony Martinez is better, if not the same level at the moment. Even Ivan Nilsson, who they've got, doesn't play a lot, I think is a fantastic striker. I think they've got really good striking options off the bench as well. And I think it's just a testament to the depth they have, especially up top of Porto.
So they have plenty of depth. That's one thing we've mentioned. Ivan Nilsson actually, you know, playing a bit of football lately, has started the past two games for Porto over Tony Martinez, who was relegated to an unused substitute in the recent match. Ivan Nilsson, past four. So will be interesting to see what happens. I completely agree, though. Vitinha, you mentioned, another masterclass in midfield. Have to give some credit as well to Fabio Vieira, who came off the bench and got himself an assist. Two phenomenal Olival-made talents. And overall, it's going to be a very, very mouth-watering league season in Portugal. You know, so much drama in the top three, as well as in everyone else. Some really interesting games coming up. Porto going up against Boa Vista, Estoril against Benfica, Sporting taking on Vitória de Guimarães. Very interesting weekend coming up. Without any further ado, I want to get into the talent of the week section, close off today's episode. And I am going to go to today's derby between Gil Vicente and Braga. So Gil Vicente taking on Braga in Barcelos, and you know, some interesting names on both sides. Samuel Lino, Kanya Fujimoto, two players we've talked a lot about on Gil Vicente. Once again, impressing. Braga, on the other hand, some players we've grown accustomed to, such as Diogo Leite, Al-Musrati, Ricardo Horta. But one new face who definitely caught my eye was Vitor Oliveira, 21 years old, started for the first time in the Primeira and got an early goal in the fourth minute to lead Braga to a 1-0 victory. Vitor Oliveira, you know, getting the start was a bit of a surprise to me, but obviously he paid off Carlos Carvalhal's confidence with a massive performance. Center forward has been quite of a question mark for Braga, as well as other positions, but definitely center forward, right? We've seen Abel Ruiz, who came over from Barcelona as part of the Francisco Trincao deal. Ruiz recently got a call-up to the Spain national team squad, but frankly, I haven't been that impressed with him this season. I think that he's, you know, lacking a lot. As well as his compatriot, Mario Gonzalez, who, you know, we thought would be the answer, came from Villarreal after a phenomenal loan spell at Tondela. And you know, Mario as well has struggled big time. So I believe that neither Mario Gonzalez nor Abel Ruiz have scored a goal so far for Braga this season. Or actually, no, Abel scored that goal against Sporting in like the second match day. Since then, he has not scored for Braga. So since August 14th. So both those Spaniards being left on the bench today, and 21-year-old Portuguese forward Vitor Oliveira, right, coming out of the academy and leading them to victory. Vitor had previously scored in a friendly against Villarreal and had played briefly against Santa Clara and Sporting, but you know, being rewarded with a start and leading Braga to victory. Braga currently fifth. What is your take on the center forward situation at Braga? Because this is something that we've been talking about, not just this season, but last season as well, you know, that they clearly needed a center forward. They got one with Mario Gonzalez, but right now, I don't know, perhaps Vitor Oliveira could establish himself as a strongest option.
Yeah, what you were saying about rewarding people with starts, I think Carlos Carvajal is a great man manager. He gives opportunities to people who deserve it. And like we've all seen the hype with Roger coming in, 15 years old. But I think it's something that Carvajal has taken a lot of places, even in England where he was there. He does give the people opportunities to sort of progress and to shine. And I think he does that really well. And ever since he's taken over Braga, you know, taking over from Mourinho's job was no sort of easy task. But I think he's done a phenomenal job. And I think, like you said, getting Vitor Oliveira the start was definitely a good shout. But I do think they're going to... I think Abel Ruiz is going to kick on. And I do think the same with Mario. I think they're both obviously got the talent. We've seen it in previous seasons. I think maybe it's just a lack of confidence or a lack of form. I think Mario was like you said, fantastic for Tondela. He's one that I actually wanted at Sporting. I think they signed him for like 2.5 million, which was not a lot of money, especially considering the sales Braga made from sort of January last year to the summer. So Carvajal has a plan in place, and he's a good manager. I don't like him because he's at Braga, and that's the only reason who I said I don't really like Carvajal. But I think, like I said, a great man manager, and I feel like he's someone that as a footballer you'd want to play for, especially, you know, people have dreams of like playing for Benfica and Porto and Sporting. But as a young talent, I think you should be setting your sights on Braga to progress, because that's what they do. I think it's the sort of Braga philosophy as well as just Carlos Carvajal of giving youngsters opportunities. And I think they have a great plan in place. And I think Vitor Oliveira is probably next on that plan.
Absolutely. Who is your talent of the week, Sam?
There is actually a lot of players you could give it to. And I'm going to be biased. I'm going to admit. I'm just going to go straight in for Daniel Braganza. I think that was a perfect game for him. I was going to either pick him or Charles. I thought he was fantastic in keeping Benfica at bay for 96 minutes, which is incredible stat in general. But for me, Braganza has just shown that he's got the quality and he's going to progress and he's going to be someone who we talk about for the next 10 years. You know, midfielders can go, especially centre midfielders can go to about 36, 37. Especially the sort of world-class ones that we've seen over the years, like I mentioned, Iniesta, Pirlo, all of these players that age like fine wine. I think Braganza is just getting better and better with age. He might not have been ready for last season. You know, John Mario was there, and it was between John Mario and Matheus Nunes, and Braganza was sort of the afterthought. But I think he's ready to take over, and Braganza is 100% my talent of the week.
Daniel Braganza, potentially the long-term answer. To João Mário in midfield for Portugal and Sporting, we shall see. Another phenomenal performance from him at the weekend. I'm really excited to see if he starts in Sporting's next league match against Vitória. Without any further ado, thank you so much, Sam. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on. As always, guys, make sure to check out Sporting 160 EM. They have some great content and analysis on Sporting. And, of course, hope to have you on again, Sam, in the near future. Without any further ado, thank you so much to everybody for tuning in. And also make sure to check out BTL's exclusive interviews over the past week with Berna Gosbasi, the first female president in Super League history, as well as my exclusive interview for BTL on with Philip Michael, which we just released today. Thank you so much, Sam, once again.
No, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure and I had a great time.